Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We, at Us Lifting Us, have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join this conversation tonight, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Have you registered for our 2024 ULU Annual Convention and Members Meeting? It will be held in Atlanta on Saturday, March 9th and Sunday, March 10th. Tonight, we will give you plenty of reasons why you should register if you have not. And there's still, since this is a members-only meeting, there is still time to join ULU. So you can join us for our convention in Atlanta or by Zoom. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion are Baba Hakima and Brother Onti, both of whom are founding members of ULU. Tonight's topic is UBC. It's a family affair. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis, and good to be with the family.
It's good to have you again. Brother Onti, how are you tonight?
Greetings, Sister Q, and greetings to our family. I'm excited, feeling well. We have a lot to discuss and unpack tonight. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
We're looking forward to it as well. So who's going to begin tonight, Baba Hakima or Brother Onti?
Baba Hakima, if you don't mind, let me jump out.
Yes, thank you.
I want to pose to our listening audience tonight this question. What is the problem? As we sit in our living rooms and in our homes or on the radio, in our cars, and we listen to the litany of problems facing not just black folks, but folks all around the globe, whether we're talking about global warming as a crisis that threatens all life on the planet, and we ask ourselves, well, what is the root question, what is the root cause of global warming? Let me cut right to the chase and just simply say capitalism. It's the economic system that is extracting the fossil fuels from the minerals of this of our planet and burning it for energy. And that process has reached a crisis level, and is threatening to disrupt all of the Earth's ecological system. And so it cannot be ignored, and the clock is ticking. We have to solve it, and solve it soon. We're also witnessing a horrific genocide taking place in Gaza, where tens of thousands of people are being slaughtered in front of our very eyes. Again, what is the root cause? We would argue capitalism. There's a fight going on as to who's going to control the mineral wealth and the resources of that area of the world. And it's a settler colonial project working to evict the indigenous population from their land. We could also talk about the global health crisis, which was so acutely made before us during the recent pandemic. So we see black people leading all of the health indicators, whether it's heart disease or stroke or cancer or diabetes. We are leading all categories in terms of being afflicted with this crisis. Again, we ask the question, what is the root cause? And the root cause, again, is capitalism. The way that we eat and the lifestyle that we practice in this country, this high consumption of animal protein products is driving a health crisis that shows up as heart disease, stroke, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and a litany of other problems. Again, the root cause of that is capitalism. We may not have thought about it that way before, but if we do some research, we'll see very quickly how capitalism is the problem lurking in the background, driving these crises. So it brings us to the question of the solution. And what we want to focus on this evening is we and Us Lifting Us recognize that the entire planet is pushing towards an alternative economic system, a better way of distributing goods and services and producing products that is sustainable and viable for the majority of the Earth's people. We want to talk about tonight two things. One, what is New Ujamaa? Because this is the economic model that the ancestors have birthed in us and are bringing out of us. And we want to talk about how this particular economic model will solve the crises of energy production, will improve our health, will move us away from these authoritarian dictatorships, and really give us a good shot building a world that is sustainable and just and peaceful. The second thing that we have to talk about is what we call the UBC, the Ulu-based communities, because this is the economic engine that allows us to build the New Ujamaa economy in the spaces where we live, whether we're in North America, whether we're in the Caribbean, or whether we're on the African continent. It's the Ulu-based communities that becomes the microcosm, the seed, if you will, of the New Ujamaa economy. And so we're excited tonight to present this information, and we want to invite those on the call to call in and ask us how New Ujamaa solves our problems both for power and for sustainable living, and then how they can participate in building an Ulu-based community in the cities or neighborhoods where they are, and begin to see the same revolution, if you will, of a communal life that, as we said before, is viable and sustainable. So we want to talk about New Ujamaa as the economic model that the entire planet is looking for, and we also want to talk about the Ulu-based community as the mechanism or the machinery that puts the New Ujamaa economy in place in our cities and neighborhoods and around the world. And Baba Hakima, help us perhaps in succinctly helping begin the conversation around what is New Ujamaa and why is this such a revolutionary and why is it such a powerful mechanism to move our community into the 21st century, both in terms of being liberated and exercising sovereignty again for the first time over the last 500 years.
Well, thank you, brother. You gave a great overview and pointed to a major contradiction of the way a good percentage of the planet has organized itself into essentially a predatory economy, a predatory practice, as opposed to being concerned about the welfare of the whole. I would just say to the community, this is not something that we have thought about over the past week or months. We actually started with this discussion around what we are branding as New Ujamaa in 2011. And once we made the decision to grab a hold of it, this need, we met every week face-to-face for a whole year, well, for more than a year. And then in June of 2013, we actually brought the legal structure together. But I offer that as to say that we've looked at this, we've turned it upside down, we've torn it apart, put it back together. We've had some successes, we've had some failures, and we are currently entering a new phase of our development. And when I say our development, I mean us, Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. When we first were formed in June of 2013, we were a limited liability company, and we essentially focus as one unit with members in multiple cities and multiple countries as well. But the exciting thing is that we have learned that the strength of our process is in its base, in its foundation. And so we're now in the process of incubating, creating, stimulating hundreds of local chapters of ULU. We call them, as you mentioned, UBC, ULU-based collectives. But essentially what they are, they are our members organized in such a fashion that they can infuse the system, the model, the paradigm that we call New Ujamaa into the local community and massage it long enough that it comes to life and becomes embedded in the local community. And the beautiful thing about it is that it is an economic creature in and of itself. In other words, the community becomes an organism, much the way it is an organism now, social, but it also has a strong economic underpinning, should I say. And so at our convention and our members meeting, looks like it's coming next week. Time has passed, and so it's right upon us. And so we will be focusing on this new paradigm that we call a New Ujamaa, but in specific, we're going to be talking about how the UBC formats itself, organizes itself, participate in process so that it brings about an Ujamaa, New Ujamaa structure economy in the local community, and not only does it among ULU members, but among organizations and institutions that may not be a part of ULU, but infuses this system into the DNA, so to speak, of the local community. The thing that makes it magic, that makes it different, that makes it, the term you use, revolutionary, is that it's not capitalistic. It's not predatory. It's really something really refreshing. It's something that focuses on ownership by the local collective, and that local collective being in community with other local collectives around the country and around the world eventually. But the main thing is community ownership of the means of production. So we're talking about the UBC, the local chapter of Us Lifting Us, doing the spade work of building a network of community-owned business enterprises that create good-paying jobs with benefits, with a wholesome working condition, with the opportunity for profit sharing, and that those businesses with those good jobs are good citizens in the community in helping to produce and move products, goods, and services that are part of the general economy, but we focus on those products, goods, and services that we produce and that serve us best, and that these institutions, as they mature, will also produce a surplus that's plowed back into the community for growth, not only growth locally, but growth nationally and internationally. So it's a unique time, and Uncle, you really summed it up because, you know, we've got to get back in the rhythm of the planet and understand that this is the only home we got. And it's a fool that would destroy his home. And so we got to get back in order. And so that's part of what we will be focusing on Saturday and Sunday of next week. I'm not sure if there's anything else I need.
Baba Hakima, allow me to summarize what you just shared.
Okay.
The new Ujamaa economy is an expansion of the principle of Ujamaa that we practice in Kwanzaa that was developed by Dr. Malana Karenga in 1966. And that definition of Ujamaa was to own and operate our own stores, shops, and other businesses and to profit together from them. We in Us Lifting Us have expanded that definition to say to collectively own and operate our own stores, shops, and other businesses and to benefit from them together.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out, we are building a network of hybrid community-owned enterprises that we are stressing group ownership as opposed to private ownership. That's part of the problem of – that's why capitalism as it's practiced today is predatory because it's privately owned enterprises. What ULU is building towards is community-owned enterprises. So they're group-owned, they are family-centered, and they're family-centered because that's part of the definition of Ujamaa that
mm-hmm.
former President Mwalimu Julius Nyerere showed us in Tanzania. He reminded us that the root meaning of Ujamaa is familyhood. In other words, we are practicing this cooperative economic way of life because it reflects African familyhood. So at the core of how we do business is this idea of family. And then the other point that we have to stress is that this system, this network of hybrid community-owned enterprises is based on African values. If we miss that component, then we run the risk of setting up businesses that wind up duplicating the very businesses that are exploiting our communities right now. So when we say African values-based businesses, we're talking about businesses that are based on the philosophical idea of Ma'at, which is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity, and on the values of the Nguza Saba, the unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So the new Ujamaa economy encapsulates all of those very, very important principles, group ownership, family-centered, African values-based. And then when we talk about the ULU-based collectives or the ULU-based communities, that is the formation of people in our community who embody those ideals and those principles and set up businesses that help us to live that out. So it is a radically different formation. It is revolutionary in the sense that it goes to the very core of how we treat each other as human beings. We don't look at each other as ways of how we can profit off of one another. We are setting up economic relationships that enable us to share our gifts with each other in a way that expands the well-being and the health of the entire community. It's diametrically opposed to capitalist practices, which we know are hyper-individualistic, highly competitive, violent, and understand the world is driven by material rather than by spirit. So the Ulu model is guided by the spirit of our ancestors and the Creator, and shows us another way of how we can live together, how we can share the resources of the planet, and how we can build the institutions that will create a sustainable and viable environment for our children.
Okay.
So continue, Baba Hekima.
Well, hopefully, brothers and sisters in the listening audience understand how practical this is. If you don't, just think of the community where you live and point out several businesses that may be located in the community or around the community that are good citizens in terms, well, I shouldn't say that. But think of them as transferring their ownership to the community so that the revenue generated from them didn't go to Korea, didn't go to Paris or London or Japan or to Buckhead or to Manhattan, you know, out of the community, but that the business was rooted in the community, belonged to the community, and the surplus, again, instead of going into the pockets of individual owners or small group owners, actually got plowed back into the community based on a central planning and research in terms of what the community needed, the kinds of things that the community would support and defend. And what you have now is a community that participates in the global economy in such a way that it captures and redirects a greater percentage of that economic flow or economic energy than it otherwise would. And that otherwise, or as it does now, flows right back out of the community. I think it was a part of the Cosmic Slop movies was that Bootsy Collins or Funkadelics, or y'all remember the names of those old
Funkadelics?
Yeah, you know, they produced the movie Cosmic Slop, and of course the main movie was aliens coming down to take all the black folk off the planet. But there was one dealing with reparations, and it was a skit, of course. And so the merchants got together and say, you know, this idea about reparation isn't such a bad idea. He said, Bob, you order some new Cadillacs. And Rob, you order some more Hennessy. And so-and-so, you order some more high-top shoes. You know, we're talking about or stacked shoes or whatever. Whatever we would like. Because they knew that we didn't have an economy. We spent money in an economy, but it wasn't owned by us. So it's like having a bucket with gaping holes. Yeah, you may be recognized as a community, but at best you're a servant community. And so what Ujamaa does is gives us the capacity to participate based on our own interests and our own needs in a global economy, because now what comes into our community, obviously it's going to flow out at some point, but because we have sound, strong buckets, reservoirs, so to speak, we can now bring economic energy, economic revenue into our community, use it to build and sustain our community in ways that we could never do before, simply because the ownership of these enterprises is in the hands of the community. It's not in a situation where Revlon or these cosmetics companies could come in and buy our businesses like they bought Soft Sheen, or who was it, Viacom, that purchased BET. So the essence of what we're talking about is you've covered it very well, is mechanically, if it's true that in excess of $1 trillion flows through the black community on an annual basis, if we were successful in building a network of business enterprises that was successful in capturing just an additional 0.5% of that flow, 0.5% of $1 trillion is $5 billion a year in revenue. And believe me, it doesn't take a whole lot of infrastructure to capture significant portions of the economic flow because it's so big. It's huge. So even though we're talking about value-based, and it may be some high principles that we're talking about, and we definitely need to adhere to that, but this is the most practical thing we could ever do as a community. That is to integrate into the mix of businesses, institutions in our community, community-owned businesses, and grow them. Initially, they're going to be small. Later on, they'll become larger. And later on, they'll become huge. Local, national, and international, including land ownership, owning buildings, owning equipment, owning machineries, owning knowledge, and being in a position to create jobs that can be passed down to future generations, creating land holdings that can be passed to future generations, creating capital that could be passed to future generations. We're talking about being in a position, much the way we envision the Garvey movement, if it was successful, in being able to own productive factories, own means of transportation, being able to make a decision to put a production plant in Colombia, South America, or in Burundi, or wherever we wanted to put it, and being able eventually to fund larger and larger and larger projects. But it starts with what Auntie has so adequately laid out, this economic paradigm we've branded New Ujamaa, family-centered cooperative economics, as opposed to individually-centered economics. And we just simply have to do the spade work, plant the seeds, fertilize it, grow it, and ultimately to grow the economy that we have in our hands now, but ultimately to grow it as an African economy that can compete favorably with other economies in the world. All economies that we can point to except the global economy are sub-economies or niche economies or, in some cases, alternative economies. And so we'll start it as an alternative economy or niche economy, but we want to grow it so that African people participate in an economic environment that doesn't favor Europe, doesn't favor China, but that as good citizens of the earth, we're going to be in communion with all of people on the earth, but we don't want to be permanently in the position we're in now where we're always taking it on the chin. So
Bob, as you were talking, and you said to picture our communities where there would be these business enterprises that we owned. And it made me think about, I live in Ellenwood, Georgia. You're in East Point, Georgia. And as we walk, if we walk through our communities, we can point to businesses, but most of those businesses, the majority of those businesses, are not owned and operated by us. And as I was listening to a recording from Brother Malcolm the other day, and he says, you know, if we spend our money in businesses that are not owned by us, then that money flows out of our community every day. What you and what Us Lifting Us is proposing is that in all of our communities, we will begin to open up businesses that we own and that we operate, and that operate on a different set of values. So just think about the community where you live and ask ourselves the question, what would it look like, what will it look like when in each of these spaces there are ULU-owned business enterprises, whether we're talking dry cleaners or grocery stores or ULU marts that provide a range of products, clothes, underwear, all the products that we need on a day-to-day basis, we would begin to see those ULU-owned businesses providing those goods and also those jobs and also that revenue back into circulation in the neighborhoods and the cities where we live.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating and bold vision, and we have to get back to seeing ourselves operating economically that way. For so long, we have not had the opportunity to do this on a large scale, and now we do, because to your point, if we capture just one half of 1% of that $1.3 trillion flowing through our community, that's $5 billion annually. I would challenge us to say, you know, let's shoot for 1% and generate $10 billion annually. Because there's so much that we can do in by way of self-healing when we have reorganized the flow of money through our own business operations. So
yeah,
it's exciting, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, and really, we're kind of shortchanging our folk. There are cooperative-type business entities in the world. One in particular, the whole population of the group that built it is only 1 million people. And the business success is in the range of $10 to $15 to $17 billion a year in gross sales.
And that's euro, Father Hekima. That's actually double that. You're talking 25 to 30 billion annually.
Okay. And so look at our population just here in the U.S., and how much larger our potential is than some of the other people who are using similar principles in other parts of the world. But the other thing that makes this unique is that the churches in our community, the fraternities and sororities in our communities, the large halls, the households in our community will own shares in this enterprise. And so the success is not just coming back to ULU to build another business. So we're talking about not only creating jobs, but we're also talking about a process that allows individuals in the community to participate in our profit-sharing approach so that they're building intergenerational wealth, you know, for those children, for those grandchildren, and future generations. So there's a an opportunity in all of this, a major feature in here where millions of our people eventually will be involved in profit sharing related to this system. And it's just so much that we can do. We've got to build a firm foundation. But the logic of it is so simple as to say that we need to be spanked for not having developed it many years ago. For instance, if you asked a group of us to reverse engineer Black Wall Street to build it again today, you couldn't do it. It's impossible to do. But if you introduced group-owned enterprises, you could do it. Because the thing that made Tulsa work was forced segregation. In other words, the maids, the butlers, the carpenters that went into greater Tulsa and earned money and brought it back to Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, whatever those streets were, they had to use it in their community because they couldn't go back across the tracks and go to any stores, anything. They were forced to develop. The merchant class understood that that was a mistake. And so we had more than 100 communities of business excellence throughout this country, Harlem, in Atlanta, Sweet Auburn, but all across the country. And when the merchant class understood that you couldn't leave Black folk to their own, you know, designs, they began to manipulate our taste such that we wanted to go across the tracks and spend our money. There's another example, and I'll probably send it out again. Family, you can Google the Market Women of Charleston, South Carolina. During slavery, during the enslavement period, the plantations around Charleston would send African women from the plantation into Charleston because they had a world-renowned marketplace. They would bring commodities from the farm and with instructions to trade it for what the plantation needed and to come back. And of course, they did that. But what the market women did, whatever commodity they got from the plantation to take to the marketplace, they traded it not necessarily for the end product that they would bring back to the plantation, but for something that they could make a little gain from. And they may have traded several times, 10, 15, or 20 times during the time that they were in the marketplace, generally on Saturdays. And then when they finally purchased the product that the plantation needed, they had money that they had made that day. But not only was that practiced by one, there was a horde of African women who practiced that, and they formed a cartel. And they got so powerful that from a trading point of view, they ran much of the market as enslaved women. And the merchants, of course, later on, the Chamber of Commerce or whatever it would be, they crushed it. But even the plantations knew about it, and they would get a little kickback. But when we're left alone and we're left we have to think like that. We have to think sovereign right now. There's nothing keeping us from building a Black economy, an African economy, right in the neighborhoods where we live. We just have to appreciate, yes, that there are Black-owned businesses and enterprises, and we're not castigating them. We're going to work with them. But our salvation is going to come from the introduction, the infusion of truly community-owned enterprises so that the surplus stays in the community, and we're going to work with our existing Black-owned businesses and shops and stores, and they will even fare better. But ultimately, the community and we as a collective are not going to be successful until we control, have greater control of the commerce, the economics of our own community. I just say this, and I'll turn it back over to you. We have a saying in Ulu, we either control the economics of our community or forever be at the mercy of others. And that's a true statement today. That will be a true statement 1,000 years from now or 100,000 years. If you don't control your economy, then you're at the mercy of who does. And so those are some additional points.
And that's fantastic because it comes right back down to us practicing Kuji Chagaliya, self-determination. And where I'm going with that is to say that we organize through the Ulu-based communities, small groups of 5 to 25 people who are committed to doing the research, forming themselves into a cadre, if you will, and practicing New Ujamaa thinking, so that they would research their neighborhoods, their surrounding areas, determine the best business to launch in that area, begin to generate the raising of the capital to launch a business, and then ultimately to run that business, and then to derive the surplus from that business and funnel that back into their own communities. In other words, to form a UBC is the starting process to launching the new Ujamaa economy in their neighborhoods and in their cities. So we're suggesting that groups of anywhere from 5 to 25 people come together with the commitment that we are going to pool our money. We're going to do the research to determine the best businesses to launch, and we're then going to, through the Us Lifting Us formation, that is through the mothership that we call, harness the money to open these up, to open these business enterprises, and as they become successful, we then use the surplus from these businesses to undergird our own communities. To a portion would come back for charity, for schools and health care. A portion would come back to be bonuses for the people who work in the businesses. And a portion would come back to as something similar to a dividend for the cooperative owners in these different locales. So the linchpin for this whole process is to identify groups of people who will form themselves into Ulu-based communities and start launching these cooperative businesses, these group-owned community businesses that can bring this return back to our people.
Okay.
But you need to, I'm sure there's some pieces, some points of that that need to be further highlighted. So go right ahead, Baba Hekima, and help us to better understand the UBCs as the mechanism that launches this new Ujamaa economy.
Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing about it is that when we look into our community, there are literally hundreds and thousands, in some cases, tens of thousands of our people who are active, who are consider themselves community builders. It may come under any number of names, but they're not static. They are trying to improve the community and strengthen the community and build institutions. And what we will do is be in a position to aid that in growing faster, growing stronger by allowing the community to use a tool, a process that allows for a greater percentage of the capital to stay in the community. I don't remember what they were. There's some notions about what happens in the Jewish community in terms of how long a dollar stays in the community, how long it, you know, how many turns a month, term, or whatever the term is. But in some cases, it's, you know, multiple days, 15 days, 20 days, or whatever else. And then the joke is, of course, it stays in the black community 6 hours. So what we are actually doing is putting in place practices, machinery, tools that forces the circulation and retention of capital resources, forcing them to stay in our community longer. That's going to help everybody. That's going to help the existing businesses. That's going to help the banks. That's going to help everybody because Ulu will not be isolated. And so the mechanics of this, again, and I think it's really plain to see if we have eyes to see, is that the households, the institutions, the individuals in our community now become stakeholders in the business life of our local community. They become stakeholders because they may be employees in the businesses, their children may be employees. They may introduce a good product or services that would be handled by the businesses. But for the most part, the way they become stakeholders is once they understand this and they understand the soundness of this from a business perspective, they will become shareholders. They will actually become members of Ulu and purchase shares in their local investment clubs, and these investment clubs would then place their pots, you know, of revenue into the bigger pots to fund these businesses. But as this process succeeds, as you mentioned earlier, there's a benefit, not only to the community, but for the individual members. And the other thing I want to make clear, Ulu membership is not just for individuals. A law firm can be a member. A church can be a member. And any kind of, as long as it's a legal entity, it can have membership and own shares. I envision that a congregation, a church congregation, would make the decision that let's take the money we got building up in a building fund and let's put it in Ulu and leave it there for X number of years, and then when we're ready to build, take it out. But it would have earned money. And so it's going to be a great investment, not only for the community, but for the households, the individuals, and organizations and institutions in the community. And there's another benefit that we haven't talked about, and I think it's critical that we talk about it. We have low self-esteem, not only as individuals but as a community. It's not good psychologically and spiritually to know that you're being played. You've been manipulated. You've been overrun on a consistent basis. How grand is it going to be for us to know that we have put in place systems and institutions that give us the capacity to have greater control over what happens in our community? And this is especially true for our children, for the shorties, so to speak. How grand is it going to be for them to know that their parents, their grandparents, their church, their other organizations in the community, you know, it got this under control. And maybe in many cases they may have to leave the community to get a good education. Maybe they're going away to another historically black college or university someplace else and coming back. But wherever they go, they have a sense of saying that they don't have to buckle down and get a good education or training or skill to work for somebody outside of our community. They have a sense that they are acquiring skills and you know, the attitude and confidence to become a community builder based on a broad and well-founded strategy, system or paradigm that puts us progressively in the driver's seat. So it's a new day, and I appreciate you saying that New Ujamaa is revolutionary. It is, and it's in our hands, and nobody can really stop us. We're at the base, and I want all of us to think of hundreds and eventually thousands of these local chapters in communities throughout the African world, doing the same thing and aiding each other in developing the best ideas, the best research, the best strategy, the best management practices. And, you know, we're just doing it. We're doing it, and we're not getting anybody else's way, but we're not letting anybody else get in our way either.
You know, Baba Hakim, as we're winding down, I like that term, community builders. And I'm thinking, so to actualize the UBC, we need, as a starting group, 5 to 25 people who are willing to come together and subscribe at whatever level is comfortable for them. It might be $5 a month or $10 a month or $25 a month, $100 a month. But begin to pool the resources. And as those resources accumulate, we then launch group-owned community business enterprises. And as you say, nothing can stop us. So, you know, as we look around, what we're saying is, can we find 5 more or 20 more people like ourselves who are willing to pool their money, put a monthly subscription together, whether, like I said, whether it's $5 or $10 or $25 or $100 a month, to start the process, to start is what is necessary. I believe people are ready to go. And they just need to be pointed in the right direction. And we would say ULU and New Ujamaa is the right direction and the right tool for this radical empowerment of our communities at the economic level, which is what we have not been able to do on a larger scale heretofore. Now we're in a position to do it. And it couldn't have come at a better time because our community is under assault as never before. So this is the tool that the ancestors have given us, and I believe, along with you and with the other ULU members, that we are on the verge, on the cusp of building this network of hundreds of ULU-based communities, and launching hundreds and thousands of businesses that will begin to provide the needed goods and services for our people going forward.
Okay. I'll just say another thing as well, is that the timing is perfect because, as you mentioned and you point out very often, the contradiction in capitalism, everybody understands them. I mean, the globe is in turmoil and is asking for a new way forward. So if you Google new economic thinking, you'll see people around the globe are seeking to come up with models like we're talking about. And they're talking about the same principles, the same end goals, and that the economies of the future must be in harmony with the planet, and must, you know, not be the predatory creatures that we've seen in the past. But I think the point I want to make is that the whole planet knows, and humanity knows that it's time for a new economy, a new type of economic paradigm for our people. And of course, we want to announce again that it's still not too late. I don't think it's too late. Can people still register, Auntie?
They can still register, Baba Hakima. Absolutely.
Okay. until the 5th, or is that the cutoff date?
Yes.
I think the 5th. And so for members who are on the in the listening audience, if you haven't registered, go to the website, usliftingus.com, and the registration invitation is right in your face. And so this is the first time that we're coming together face-to-face since the since COVID. So this is, you know, it's going to be great to actually hug and be in the physical presence of the family. You know, for the past 3 years, we've been looking at each other through these screens, and we'll still accommodate brothers and sisters virtually, but we're hopeful that everyone can physically come to the sessions next weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, well, thank you, Baba. Sister Q, you want to close us out? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Baba Hakima and Brother Ankti, for your presentation tonight and letting us have further information and clarity on the UBCs and the intention of New Ujamaa, and also reminding people that we still have time to register if they want to come to our annual meeting and convention in Atlanta next Saturday and Sunday. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening, and we want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
A family reunion gonna happen. Whether you want to believe it or not, because you'll bleed.